This is the continuation of session 6.
Okay, we'll start. Gotta get through the last few rooms, okay? And then it's important to practice this for the next 3-4 days so you don't forget. People have done it before. They immediately went home and drew themselves a blueprint. Okay? And that's very important. You know,
do we have an architect in the crowd?
Susan did a really great one last time. Susan did one. Are you working on one? I don't know. She did a really great one last time, and it ended up looking like some tantric mandala thing. And then it dawned on me that this is what mandalas are. You know, and huh? That's all. This is the meaning of a mandala. Okay, we'll start. So she drew it on a strip of paper like that, and it was very cool because it was different shapes and very beautiful. And then you just use it wherever you go. You don't have to have any writing on it, you see? And it's very cool. And that's what the early mandalas are. So start with breath. Start with your breath. Deep breaths, but not forced. And focus on the Lama in your heart. Kundu Noble Loop, the all-encompassing jewel meditation. Then put yourself back in the turret room and the sunlight's coming down on you and you've lifted up the staff, the kadampa, kadvanga. Okay. I got mixed. And you're holding it up towards the light. You're looking up and it represents you'll devote yourself only to your practice because you realize it's the only thing you can take with you. And if you die and take this way of thinking about self and others with you, you'll have a very holy time. And you point to the blue door. And your body's still, but your head moves to the right. You look towards the right, towards the door, and you point the staff at it. And you go to the door and you look at it and you reflect that this is going to represent the practice of exchanging myself and others. I almost like to call it redefining myself and others. Then you go through the door, and the first room, these are much larger rooms, and in the middle of the first room is a big table, and there's a person sitting there on the other side, and there's one of those checkered tablecloths, and it's all laid out for eating something, and there's a stand next to the table on your side, and on top of the stand is a nice plate of food and a cup of something to drink. And then you approach the table and you sit down opposite them and they're looking at you. And you pull your magnifying glass out of your pocket and you lean over the table and you look at them through the magnifying glass at their eyes. And then they're glancing over at the food and the cup, and there's dessert there, of course. And then you realize that's what they want. And then first you give them the plate of food. And that represents fulfilling other people's physical needs, what they want, physical desires, which are legal and moral. Okay. Then you hand them the glass, which is fulfilling their emotional needs, anticipating and fulfilling what they need emotionally. And then finally you fulfill their spiritual desires, which is dessert, and you hand them dessert. And this is like giving them sweet teachings on Dharma, or getting them, you know, interested in a book or something basic. It doesn't have to be a Dharma book. I mean, maybe they have to start with a movie that has an uplifting moral to it or something like that. A song that has some good lyrics to it. It doesn't always have to be a blatant Dharma. these rooms are like large ovals, and they're working around the, you're actually working around the courtyard, but you're still inside the building. And then the next room you come to is a large, another large oval room. And it's very similar, a very similar person sitting across the table. Same things there. And this time you go around to their side of the table and ask them to sit on your side and you sit on their side. Musical chairs. And then they reach for the food themselves and the drink themselves and the dessert themselves. And this, don't forget, this represents putting yourself in their mind. The first one, in the first room, you're still maintaining the distinction of you and them, and you are watching them from another side of the table, and you're seeing what they want and you're supplying it, anticipating it and supplying it. And then in the second room, you're actually putting yourself inside of them mentally and trying to think like them, trying to understand what they like, but from a much more intimate viewpoint, that you're actually inside of them, but you're still sort of maintaining the distinction between you and them. It's you in their body. And this is, in practical terms, instead of just observing them and giving them what they seem to like, it's really trying to understand their lives, their background, their preferences, where they're coming from, and trying to think like them to try to figure out what it is they really need. And when it comes to the dessert, it'll be much more profound because you'll be better able to give them what they need spiritually. Then enter the third large oval room. By this time, you've worked around all the way opposite to the turret room. So you're in the exact western part of the building. You still haven't reached the courtyard. You're traveling around parallel to the edge of the courtyard inside the building. And there's a little like cafe table, those little round ones, and there's two seats facing each other, and there, again, there's a person on the other seat, and there's this big, nice cake in the middle. And the first thing you do in the room is you have this little ball of string in your pocket. It's a red string. And the first thing you do when you get in is you take the string and pull out some of the string and you walk around to the left of the table, like counterclockwise around the table. And you're laying the string out on the ground and making a circle that includes both chairs. So it's a big circle of string on the ground, on the floor, that encompasses the whole table and the chairs. And then you come back and finish it, and you stoop down and tie it. And that represents breaking down the distinction between you and other people. Now you and me is me. Then the guy says, why didn't you put the string between us on the table? And you said, well, you know, it really is just arbitrary. Let's put it around both of us. And it doesn't wreck the cake that way anyway. Okay. Then you sit down and you lean over the cake and you tap on their forehead and they tap on your forehead with their finger. First finger of your, make it third finger of your left hand. Okay. And just tapping on their forehead like three times. This represents the meditation on the common enemy. Like it won't really help just to remove the mental afflictions from your own mind. We got to work on them, all of them, in everybody's mind. It doesn't matter where they're parked right now. If you allow the people around you to have mental afflictions, if you encourage mental affliction in the people around you, sooner or later it will hurt everybody. So it represents helping each other against the common enemy. And the last thing is that room is in that room is that you take one fork and you both hold it and you take a big piece of cake out with the fork and you both eat it off the fork at the same time. And that represents that it's incomplete to just work for what you want and your own happiness. It's not really very satisfying to be happy when everybody around you is miserable. And that we're working for a common goal, that everybody's equal in wanting to be happy and not wanting to be unhappy. So it represents that really everybody's the same. Then you get up, you walk around the table, and you go to the next door, just like a silver door. And you open it, and there's a strange room, hexagonal, six-sided. In the middle is a big incense burner, like a big censer, like a big pot. And the smoke is coming out of it, this really beautiful, lovely smoke. And this represents bodhicitta. And I think when Americans hear the word bodhicitta, they think of some kind of ultimate love, or someone who really loves everybody, or something like that. And it's really something much more specific, which is that I will try as hard as I can to become an angel, a tantric deity myself, so that I can really be of service to others. I can really help other people. And I'll try to be the one happy person in the world. truly happy person in the world. I'll try to mold myself into a happy person, ultimately happy person, so that I can have the best influence on others and lead them to that. But the idea is you must do it yourself first. And that's real bodhicitta. So when you look at the incense and the smoke coming out of it that's permeating the room, the sweet smell, it's bodhicitta. And it's the idea that I will myself stop my own death and my own aging, and I'll stop all the unhappiness in my mind. And then I'll be able to teach other people. Imagine the influence of a person who has done that. And bring your mind back to the Lama in your heart and enjoy them for a while. And then there's like some light, diffusing, liquid light, warm, beautiful, golden, spreading throughout your blood veins, throughout your body. And then bursting out of the pores of your skin like needles of light, great needles of light. And now dedicate the whole karma of this whole classes we've had. Very unusual karma for a good-sized group of people to get together and talk about death all day for 3 days or something. And then at the end to come out with, some kind of feeling of love and breaking down the borders between myself and others, and to reach that state of mind by thinking about corpses and stuff, some kind of huge big karma. Very unusual. I don't think there's been another discussion like this in Raleigh today. And think about it, and think about the good karma of it, the rarity of it, and then let that light go out and touch more people than before. I'd say all the way up to the Mississippi, because Petra and those guys promised they would work from the West Coast. And we would meet and drive the Golden Stake in Kansas City, I think it was. And we'd like enlighten everybody up to there, and they'd enlighten everybody the other way. And then relax. Last thing in your homework, by the way, is called the glass of water. And I don't think I can leave you without talking about the glass of water. It's a 2-minute talk, okay? Glass of liquid. Glass of liquid. And yeah, it's in Majjhimika. It's a very holy section in Chandrakirti. And the idea is three beings sitting around a table. And on the table is a glass, and in the glass is a liquid. And one of the beings is I always see a dark basement, like a poker game going on. And like a lady with one of those barmaid costumes on and one of those things. And she's coming up and putting on this glass of liquid on the table. And I see like a one of those green poker lights coming down, and everybody has a visor on, and three beings. One is a human, one is a preta, hungry ghost, and one is a worldly deity. Okay, and then they've gotten together from three different realms to have this poker game, and which is technically impossible, I guess. And they're sitting around a glass of liquid, and there's only one glass, and the barmaid sets it in the middle of the table, and this is from Chandrakirti, okay? And the hungry ghost, I mean, the human sees a glass of water. The hungry ghost sees a glass of possum blood, because that's their karma, you see? And the deity sees a glass of nectar of immortality, okay? Like we call amrita, ambrosia. And there's only one glass of liquid, but there are three different perceptions going on. Who's right?
All three.
All three are having a pramana or a tsema, okay? All three are having a valid perception. Can one thing be three different things at once?
No.
Not to one person. You see, you have to say it that way. This pillar can't be all blue and all red at the same time. That's a principle of Buddhist logic. You know what I mean? Like, can't be. But from three different points of view, can it be three different colors at once? Yeah. That proves that the color of it is not coming from its sign. It's a perception or a projection from your mind. That's all. And an example I give in New York in class is the cylinder. Okay. Notice I don't call it a pen. And very briefly, if a dog walked in here and saw this, they would perceive it as a cylinder, something interesting to chew on. You see, their only idea about this cylinder would be, what are the odds that I could chew on that? Will this human let this go or not? You see what I mean? They would only see something to chew on. And then if a human from Raleigh, Kerry, in 1999 walked in and looked at it, they'd say magic marker or Expo 2 low order dry erase marker. Okay, they'd say marker. Okay, and so which one is it?
It's both.
It's both or neither. You see what I mean? And you got to think neither sometimes. Okay, neither means from its own side, it's neither a marker or something to chew on. Because if it were emanating markerness from its own side, then the dog would step up and write a poem, you know? And seriously, if markerness were a quality that was coming from its side, then the dog would recognize it as a marker. If chewable stickness was coming from its own side, then the human would start to salivate. You see what I mean? So we conclude that there is no quality that it has in and of itself. That's its emptiness. That's all. Forget everything else you heard about emptiness. It's all silly. It all doesn't help you. Okay? That's all. It's very simple. That's the emptiness of this what? Animal rights. Cylinder. Okay? Okay? That's all. That's the emptiness of this cylinder. Okay? What's that got to do with anything? This is another cylinder. Actually, six, okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Another cylinder sitting here, okay? I happen to be in a human realm right now. So when I look at these cylinders, I see an arm. A wrinkly, freckly, getting skinny and bumpy arm, okay? And that's what I perceive, okay? If I had better karma, you know, if I had kept my vows perfectly, what would I be seeing? Now, I'd be seeing this ineffable deity's body. Seriously. It's the same principle. Never forget it, okay? Just don't forget it. Don't forget the marker, okay? Or the cylinder. The principle is exactly the same. This doesn't have any nature of its own, any more than this does. If you accept what I said about the cylinder, you must accept what I say about this, okay? In debates in the monastery, it's a huge pleasure to get the guy to agree to the cylinder, because then he's checkmated. You know what I mean? Like, you just like are just asking questions. I did it in a year ago, October, in the monastery, 1,500 monks. You know, hey, what is this thing? oh, prove it's a cylinder, you know, and then I held up this, hey, same thing or not, you know, and you can't get out of it. You have to say, same thing. You see me? Same principle applies. I see it as an arm right now because of my karma, okay? If I had pure karma, I'd see it as a deity's body, and they don't have to die, okay? You can throw out your death meditation book, all right? All right? Same principle. You can't deny it. You're stuck. Checkmate. Okay? You have to agree it's the same thing. Okay? You don't have to die. You know, the last meditation, okay, is get out to that courtyard. There's a deity out there. Okay? So a few tantric rooms you got to go through. Okay? Kirim and Zonim. Okay? You can study them from the Lam Rim tapes sometime. Okay? But you don't have to die. Okay? You don't have to go through that. The first principle, you can destroy that first room. The gold door, you know, death is not certain, okay? Because of the pen, cylinder, okay? Same principle. That's the principle behind tantric enlightenment, okay? Emptiness and keeping your vows means that you don't have to die. And I leave you with that, okay? It's totally up to you. I have all these people coming into this little room over there saying, last time you inspired me so much, and I kept my book for 3 weeks, you know? And I kept, you know, I tracked my vows every 2 hours for 3 weeks. And then I know what's coming next, you know? It's like, but I, you know, stopped, you know? And you can't get there any other way, okay? Tantric initiations don't work if you don't keep those vows, and if you don't check them every 2 hours. It just doesn't work. Tunduk, checking your vows 6 times a day is a requirement for all tantric, anuttara tantric practice. You can't do it. And if you do check your vows, this will happen. It really happens. It really does happen. And you can change. You don't have to die like that, okay? And that's how tantra works, okay? Same principle. So don't forget the glass of water thing. Glass of liquid. You're so sneaky. All right, let's leave it. That's the holiest thing I can tell you, okay? Keep your vows. Keep the book, okay? If you don't know how to do it, learn from somebody. If you don't know your vows, get a list of them, for God's sake, okay? And do it. And you won't be able to get away from that thing, okay? It'll start changing. You won't have a choice. Very cool, okay? All right? All right, so we'll do a little prayer. And finish there. Okay. Idam guru mata kamya tayami Ekeo kut sanam ishe tsotsamashi Sanam ishe mechume Dabakuni kaba Can you start that Mingmei thing very softly?
Jomse samveda
Do a short prayer for all our lamas to live long lives. Okay, stay in this world. Especially dedicated to Lama Sopa's health, okay. Thank you. It's a very big blessing for me to very grateful to you and for it, Kadamba Center. Thank you for that. Okay.
Well,
I guess
you Michael, thank you so much for coming to Kadamba Center. It's always been very special. I did hear you say at some point today on your next visit to Kadampa. I know your schedule is busy in the near future, but we are looking forward to that already. And thank you very much.
This is the end of the sixth session. You have been listening to Death Meditation with Geshe Michael Roach. To contact us on other courses available or for further information, please check our website at www.world-view.org.